and leave some workers behind, we started to come to the conclusion that technology was racing ahead, and that's great. The problem is it's leaving a lot of workers behind. And so the line that we find ourselves repeating is that the median worker is not keeping pace with cutting-edge technology.
Why? I mean, humans are pretty good. Even if you boil us down to just the very same playing field, leave everything else out that's important about us. You quote this, maybe apocryphal, but this 1965 NASA report that this is about manned space flight. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, yeah, let's put humans in there. Why? Mm-hmm. This is quoting NASA, maybe apocryphally, comparing to computers. Man is the lowest cost, 150-pound, non-linear, all-purpose computer system which can be mass-produced by unskilled labor. even if we're on a level playing field with machines and competing, aren't humans pretty darn good computers themselves? Can't we win?
Well, I don't think we want to try to win head-to-head on a lot of the tasks. I mean, the word computer, if you go back in history, used to be a job category in the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The computer was a person who did computation.
Yeah.
That's not how we use the word anymore. And there are a whole set of capabilities that, you know, we all know computers are much better than humans at right now, starting with computation. But mm-hmm. more and that set of skills is getting broader and broader. There are still a lot of
computer skills, machine skills.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There are still a lot of things that people have an edge in, including creativity and interpersonal skills. A lot of actually physical dexterity. We still are far more dexterous than even the very best robots. Vision, language recognition. So there are still a number of areas where humans have a significant advantage. But we don't want to try to compete with computers on the areas that they are strongest. We want to try and develop businesses and industries and jobs that combine human skills with computer strengths to create something more valuable than either one could do separately.
I don't know. I read this, and on the one hand, it sounds absolutely terrific, all the machine capacity that's coming online. On the other side, it sounds like, what are humans going to be left? You know, we're going to give each other back rubs? We'll make our livings better? Maybe. I don't know. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about machines moving deeper into the workplace, taking jobs. We're asking, what will humans do in this age of accelerating innovation, smarter and smarter machines? With me in the studio today, Andrew McAfee and Eric Brynjolfsson. They're co-authors of the new book, Race Against the Machine. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. They're describing a situation where, yeah, we've had machines for a long time, but they are getting smarter and more subtle and more nuanced, moving into zones where they've never been before, and at such a pace that human adaptation, individually and as a society, it's a challenge. Andy, Eric, lots of response online. Here's one listener says, machines from above and impoverished hordes below, the American worker has no chance. What do you say?
That's way too pessimistic.
Good. Help us.
Let's keep in mind.
Bring on the light. Let's hear it.
Even in this age of global trade and extraordinarily powerful technology, over 90% of us in America have jobs, and we're a very high-wage country. And we have a huge amount of faith in the abilities of people and in the flexibility of our economy and our institutions to adapt to these rapidly changing circumstances.
Well, okay, but how's that going to work? As this grows, are there enough jobs building machines? Let's say machines are going to do a lot of work. So can a lot of us be put to work building the machines that work for the whole world? Will that employ us?
That will be part of it. Not so much building the machines.
1%?
But designing it. A lot of it's
we don't even get to build them? Outsource?
No.
I mean,
yeah.
We don't build
many computers in America.
Our wages are stagnant and our unemployment is high, so we're looking for the light here.
Well, part of it is I mean, so you mentioned iPhones. If you look at the back of the iPhone, it does say designed by Apple in California, in fine print, assembled in China. And I think that actually, ironically, the people who are most in the bullseye of some of the automation are those people doing the assembly work in China, not as much the people who are doing the design work in California.
Well, let's talk about this now, because almost always we are in the bullseye. So China's in the bullseye here when it comes to automation in factories. Why?
Well, because robots will work even more cheaply than Chinese laborers will.
No, really? No matter how, I mean, Chinese laborers, despite rising wages, there's still an awful lot of them with very low incomes.
They're still darn cheap. But keep in mind, if we think about a robot as essentially a computer with some arms attached to it, Moore's law applies, and computers keep getting cheaper over time. That applies for robots as well. The price point at which you can access these digital tools is going to do nothing but go down over time.
No, and this is not a hypothetical. Terry Gou has a factory in China.
Foxconn,
right? Exactly.
Foxconn is a big high-tech manufacturer.
They assemble a lot of stuff for Apple and other people.
Yeah. What are they doing?
They have millions of workers, and Terry,
human workers.
Mm-hmm. Well, also now they've got about 30,000 robots, and Terry Gou has orders in for another 300,000. He's threatening to order 1 million of them, and using that in part as a club to say to his workers, say, look, you know, we can replace you with robots.
So if we're going to bring on the robots, maybe China will keep that robot manufacturing there. Or are you saying it would come here? Might our factories be revived with more automated manufacturing?
We do think that a lot of American factories will be revived. We had a great conversation with Rod Brooks, our colleague at MIT, used to be the head of the computer science and AI lab, and now he's got a new company called Heartland Robotics. And his vision is to bring back a lot of manufacturing to America using robots, using humans to help manage and organize the factories, not so much doing the physical components of the manufacturing, but because of proximity to our markets, because of the flexibility, he sees a lot of potential for bringing back some manufacturing.
So we could become a manufacturing powerhouse again, hypothetically, not necessarily with more manufacturing and employment.
We've always been a manufacturing powerhouse. We're still a manufacturing powerhouse. America has until recently the largest manufacturer in the world. China might have overtaken us in the past.
Yeah, I mean, turn over the stuff in your house. You know, it's made in China, made in China, made in China, made in.
But we still make a lot in this country. Mm-hmm. We make more every year in this country. The interesting thing for our purposes, though, is that we do that while employing fewer people in manufacturing every year. So this is the great productivity of the manufacturing industry, great in a lot of ways, not if we're looking for a mass employment solution.
Which, of course, we are. This is a giant problem.
Right.
Sit with us for a second and just think about, okay, here come the machines, smarter, more supple and subtle than in a long time. What jobs do you see as gone? What jobs do you see as going? What kind of jobs do you see as relatively secure?
Well, there is a real problem here. And the person who wrote in with that question, I mean, although I think he overstates the case, we agree that there's a serious problem in terms of a lot of people being losing out in this automation. There's really three groups of winners and losers.
Okay.
One is people whose work is directly being substituted by work. Economists call it skill bias technical change. So when the ATM replaces a bank teller or
loser.
A factory. Yeah, those people loser. Lose their jobs. The people who are winners are the people upstairs in the bank who are using data visualization tools to do global finance and are getting paid more than
and
ever.
Not having to pay the teller anymore.
And not having to pay the teller, exactly. They get a lot of free services. So that's called skill bias technical change.
Yeah.
It's been accelerating in recent decades, and that's part of why people without a college education are not doing well right now.
Let's think about other jobs. So teller, gone. What else is going to fall before that particular reaper?
Well, we're just talking about a lot of people in factories who are doing, especially the more routine work, any kind of routine paper-based work, clerks, bookkeeping.
Yeah,
retail for right now is a huge industry, a big employer in America.
And I'm checking myself out of more and more stores.
One in 12 of those people.
I personally don't like it, but I'm doing it because that's what's there.
But one thing we observe is that, for example, in the wireless industry, again, that's an industry that's growing year after year while employing fewer people year after year. A spokesman for one of the wireless carriers said that's basically because people like selecting their phone and their plan online.